If a player cleans his ball during play of a hole, except on the putting green, he shall incur a penalty of one stroke. That's the rule, Jerry.
But it's just a friendly game. Why do you always have to be such a stickler?
Because that's the way I was raised.
Welcome to Spirit of the Game, brought to you by the Colorado Golf Association. Here are your hosts, Ed Mate and Lewis Harry.
Okay, welcome back to another edition of Spirit of the Game. This is Ed Mate. I am so excited not to be looking across the desk here at the table to Lewis Harry. I'd much prefer to be talking to the CGA's chief. What's your title? You're just marketing, membership, all things.
Right. Yeah. It's an M word, right?
Well, I don't need to introduce yourself. Who am I sitting across from here?
I'm Erin Gangloff. I've been here at the Colorado Golf Association for about 16 years.
Oh, my gosh. And I am old.
Well, I started off as a boat ride intern. I just would never leave. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Chief Marketing Officer is my title, but I oversee membership. And then all the fun things that come with communications. So.
Right. Well, it's exciting to have a kind of a little refresh here. So this month, it's all about Ed Mate. This is like navel gazing. There's two things that I absolutely cannot resist: a microphone and a dry erase board. And it's better if I have an audience for both, but I can entertain myself pretty well without an audience. So you're it. You're the audience.
I can't wait. Man. And little do they know is behind you is the dry erase board.
Yes.
So that makes it even better. Well, but today, Ed, we want to hear about, USGA season is underway. We've got the U.S. Open coming up. We've had the Masters. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. But really, you've got a huge story because you've been an official at these. You've been out there. You've been in the trenches, really. Yeah. And so we want to hear more about that experience and what that was like and how does that come about in your career? So I'm taking over right now.
All right. I
want you to tell me, when did you first work your first USGA national championship?
Well, I love the way you phrase that, the trenches, because it feels that way. when you're working a national championship, it's a little intimidating, to be honest. You're now, on the inside of what you've been watching on television all those years, if you're a fan of golf. But my first USGA championship was 2005, which it's hard to believe. It's almost 20 years ago now. It was at National Cash Register, NCR Country Club. And this is a fascinating story about the golf course because it was owned by one of the first corporately owned golf courses in Dayton, Ohio. But I got an invitation, and the USGA, the way it comes about is your name is sort of advanced, nominated through the networks. And I think I owe that nomination to Will Nicholson Jr., who was a former president of the USGA, great, legendary, was the chair of the championship committee at the Masters and a CGA board member forever. And I think I owed that invite to Will. So it was very exciting to get that. And I remember he called and said, did you get anything in the mail today? And I said, I did. And it was my invitation to work that championship. And what really stood out right away was just the level of detail that you are asked to at the time. And this has changed a little bit because back then you would walk with the group. Mm-hmm. So you were assigned a group each day and you were expected to get there a day or two early and really familiarize yourself with the golf course. And they would hand you a multi-page hole-by-hole notes. Mm. And it was daunting because you had to really, particularly to a new person, there were so many, every single thing on the hole was, and I'm not talking about the permanent stuff like trees and bunkers. I'm talking about microphones and wires and all the things that are behind the scenes that you don't see on television that as a rules official, you need to know they're there. Mm-hmm. Or at least you should in the event that, cause some of them are strapped down and they can't be moved. Of the others are movable. You have boom mics, you have all these things. So I was like way out of my comfort zone for sure. And I jokingly said, to somebody, I said, when you get your your radio, mm-hmm. they should read you your, what I call your Motorola rights instead of your Miranda rights. Because mm-hmm. when you go on that radio and ask a question, everybody's listening. Everybody on the Rules channel is listening. And you better, so if you ask a stupid question, believe me, it will be held against you.
Done for.
So you really, you know, and that could be a problem if people are a little afraid to ask a question, then they need to get clarification. But that was my first USGA championship. Didn't have any rulings that week that were noteworthy. Mm-hmm. It was the first of Alan Doyle's back-to-back championships. What an amazing story. I remember I walked up, and the very first person I saw hitting a golf ball in the practice round was Alan Doyle. And he took it. He swung like a hockey stick. It looked like a slap shot. Mm-hmm. And he took the club back maybe waist high and hit a shot. And he said to the fans, "Did I get that up to parallel?" And he got a good chuckle out of that. But that was my first.
Wow, that's incredible. Does it get easier when you do it a little bit more?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You get a lot more comfortable. As time went on and I got to work more USGA championships, and the senior open, basically you'd go from the senior open, right. And then if you didn't do anything to get fired because of your Motorola rights, you then get an invite to the US Amateur.
Okay.
And if you, again, don't do anything to distinguish yourself, you might get the big call, which is to the U.S. Open. And I was fortunate enough to get to experience all of those. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more in a little bit about the Masters as well. Right. But yes, it does get easier. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned, don't fret about the hole-by-hole notes. Just ignore them.
Right.
Go there, take in the big picture, ask questions about anything that really stands out. And the thing that really calmed me down more than anything, mm-hmm. I just said, if I get into a bind, I'm using the radio. There's no reason to be a hero here.
Right.
And there's only, being a famous rules official is not good. Nobody gets, what a great call. I mean, the refs were great tonight. No, the only time you're going to stand out at all as a referee in any sport is by making a bad call. So you do not want to be the center of attention. And I was very happy that I was able to make it through my career without becoming famous.
So, you want to be that well-known, executive director that made that one rule.
That's right. And believe me, they're out there.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. Open's coming up, and it's at Pinehurst. So can you tell us, what do we expect?
Yeah, so as I said, you kind of work your way up from the U.S. Senior Open, and then I got the call to work the U.S. Amateur. And I worked a couple USAMs. The one that... that stood out was Pinehurst because it's Pinehurst.
Right.
But what stood out that I did have a Motorola rights scenario there. Mm. So Pinehurst number 2 is known for its sort of turtleback greens that roll off. And because of that, they use the local rule that allows you to get 2 club lengths relief for sprinkler heads off the putting green.
Mm-hmm.
And every tournament, the night before the start of the event, the championship director, in this case it was Mike Davis before he became executive director, said everybody should bone up, study that local rule, that model local rule, because that is in play. And I didn't take that advice too seriously, so I ignored him and did not bone up on that local rule.
Mm-hmm.
So was out there. This was in the day when I don't need to know the local, just go out there and just be natural. So anyway, during the qualifying rounds, the first 2 rounds, you don't walk with a group, you're in zones.
Right.
So I was on the 16th hole, and sure enough, a player hit his ball, hit the front of the green, backed off, and he had interference.
Mm.
It met the criteria for relief for the what I call the 2x2 local rule.
Mm-hmm.
The ball was within 2 club lengths of the sprinkler head, and the sprinkler head was within 2 club lengths of the putting green. And he called me over. I said, "No big deal. Got this. No problem."
Mm-hmm.
This rule has been changed, like a lot of rules, since 2019, but it's effectively the same. Just the procedure is a little bit different. The difference is what kind of got me confused. He said, "Do I get a club length?" Once he figured out his nearest point, he says, "Do I get a club length?" And I had not read my local rules, so I got on the radio using my Motorola rights.
Right.
And I said, "I need a backside rover." And sure enough, it was Mike Davis who had told us, "Make sure you read this local rule." And I immediately recognized his voice. And I said, "Mike, this is Ed on 16. I just decided to, fess up. I said, "I did not read, didn't do my homework. Does he get a club length once he determines his nearest point of relief?" And he laughed. and said, nope, no club length. And mm-hmm. But I got it right. I got the ruling right. Instead of being embarrassed to have not done my work, you know, why try to, not that anybody would have been the wiser had I done that, but I certainly would have known. And, mm-hmm. and that would have not sat well. I still wouldn't be able to sleep at night. So anyway, that was, so when you watching the U.S. Open in a couple of weeks this month, you're going to see that local rule in play. And mm-hmm. when Martin Keimer won, he putted from everywhere off of those greens. So that's definitely one to keep an eye out for sure.
Oh, that's great. It's exciting.
Yeah.
To be back at Pinehurst to watch it. Now you can watch it from home and be an armchair rules official.
That's right. And criticize and scream at the television. Right.
With all your experiences, you know, everyone wants to know, is there a player or, you know, players out there that, you know, aren't so friendly? They're not so nice that, you know, that you kind of see on TV. We, you know, idolize a lot of these guys.
Well, so we haven't talked about the Women's Open, which is happening this week mm-hmm. As we record this. By far the nicest, I mean, this is going to sound a little bit, there's exceptions to every rule, but the women really appreciated having the rules officials there, mm-hmm. and they made you feel welcome. Mm-hmm. The Senior Open, by far the grumpiest, followed closely by the Open, mm-hmm. Maybe just even bigger egos. In general, mm-hmm. And then the U.S. Amateur, they love you. The Amateur is just, it's friendly. They just think you're part of the cool factor there, mm-hmm. because, hey, I got this guy's walking with me, and how cool is that? Jim Furyk does not think it's cool that you're walking with him inside the ropes. They no longer do that, by the way. The USGA has changed its bedside manner in the way they officiate. Now they work in zones like they do mm-hmm. at the Masters, which I think is smarter because then you don't have to know the entire golf course. You only need to know one or two holes or one hole mm-hmm. or even part of a hole. Mm-hmm. And you can put balls down in all kinds of different scenarios. And when the ball lands there, you kind of know what you're doing. You can do a lot of dress rehearsals. But there's one incident that stood out because it was directed at me. There's a general distaste for rules officials among the tour players.
Right.
But this was at Sahali, mm-hmm. and I was walking with – and this is kind of a compare and contrast. I'm walking with one of the nicest guys ever, Larry Mize, mm-hmm. and a guy who's known as a showman and Mr. – you know, just a really funny, and he is all that, Fuzzy Zeller. Mm-hmm. But there's another side to Fuzzy Zeller, which he's not very nice to the rules officials. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of known too. So anyway, the situation was Larry Mize hit his ball long on hole 16 at Sahali. Mm-hmm. I think this was 2000. I'm looking at my notes here because I've lost track of 2010. And his ball had ended up very close to a grandstand. And at the time, the USGA, in an effort to speed up the rules process, and to get it right, they would not allow you to take what was considered conventional relief mm-hmm. for TIOs, mm-hmm. where you go an equidistant arc and you just kind of follow the, you know, you just keep working your way around. You'd go right to a ball drop, which made it a lot faster.
Right.
But in this particular case, his ball was very close to the grandstand and he was going to have to take this really deliberate up and down motion to avoid hitting the grandstand. Very difficult shot. Mm-hmm. So he started going down to pick up the ball, and I stopped him, and I said, Larry, just so you know, you do not get relief in the normal manner. You're going to have to go to the ball drop. And he said, well, where's the ball drop? And I pointed it to him, and it was not in a good location. It was a long way away and a bad – it just wasn't going to be a very – you know, he kind of got a bad deal out of this. So I it was sort of apologetic, and I said, you know, you can play it where it lies or you have to use the ball drop. And I did say, if you want a second opinion, I can call a rover. And he said, no, and that's fine. And I showed him the local rules and mm-hmm. explained that. Meanwhile, Fuzzy Zeller's watching this whole thing take place. He ends up, and he was playing great. He was one or two under, playing a great round of golf. He ended up playing the ball and hit a very poor shot, made double bogey. We walk off the green, and sure enough, there's at least a two-group wait on the next hole, par three. And I'm like, great. And he couldn't have been nicer. He didn't say anything to me. I'm like, he's going to give me an earful. But boy, what he lacked, Fuzzy Zeller more than made up for. He was just in my ear about how stupid that was. And that's just the dumbest thing he's ever seen. And he personalized it to say, you know, you guys, and he was just sort of, you know, painting me with a broad brush of, you guys just don't understand. And I was like, wow, you know. So after the round, go into the clubhouse, and I thought Mark Passy, a good friend, a longtime CGA, he was a regional affairs director for the USGA, but our rep. And I asked Mark, who was in the scoring, I said, did Larry say anything about the ruling on 16? Because I was a little nervous that he was not, it was directed at me, but he might just have a, you know, some negative things to say. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, it was fine. And then as I left, I went around the corner and there was Larry Mize. And he said, I was looking for you. I just wanted to shake your hand and thank you for, so here this was two holes after a pretty bad deal. And it, again, he just took it. Mm-hmm. And I did that day, and I saw him years later when we had the 2012 U.S. Amateur at Common Ground in Cherry Hills. I sought him out because he was caddying for his son and thanked him for being such a gentleman. So that was, you know, a great guy and a not so great guy. And again, I'm sure Fuzzy Zeller is, but he's very typical of that, of these guys in a lot of ways.
Well, it's hard too because, you know, they are in the spotlight, but. What's interesting is as kids are coming up, it's teaching them, you know, be humble. Like sometimes you're not going to get your fair shake and, you know, it's how you take it and how he, you know, Larry took that. It's amazing. It's nice to see. It's refreshing, really.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that everybody can be nice when the camera's on, everybody can be nice when you're handed a trophy and you need to kiss it. What really proves your worth is when are you nice when the cameras are not on.
Right.
And the person you're talking to is not necessarily deemed to be important, but you know, just a regular schmo rules official. So I learned a lot for sure from that experience.
That's great. Well, one of the big experiences that you had was being at the Masters.
Yes.
So tell us, what's it like?
Well, again, that was another good fortune. And I owe that opportunity to Thomas Pagel, who is Thomas has been on this podcast, and I will always be indebted to Thomas for giving me that opportunity. And you said, how did that come about? Well, Thomas, after leaving here, starting out like you as a boatwright intern, becoming the executive director of the Utah Golf Association, and then was hired by the USGA, is now the chief governance officer for the USGA. And in that capacity, he oversees the Rules of Golf Committee. And there's one advisory seat on that committee reserved for a representative of the state and regional golf association community. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to be invited by Thomas to serve on the committee. And it couldn't have been a better time because I joined the committee in 2015, and this was in the run-up to the 2019 rules changes. So it was so much more fun to be a part of that process, because typically the rules committee, you really are talking about minutiae. You know, should we change a semicolon to a colon? Should we add a parenthetical here? Should we renumber a decision? Mm-hmm. Well, the whole book was under discussion, and nothing was out of bounds, so that couldn't have been more fun. But as a byproduct of that, the Masters has a longstanding tradition, like all of its traditions, of inviting the entire Rules Committee, which isn't a big committee. There's 12 of you, 12 U.S., and then there's the Joint Rules Committee, get invited to work as rules officials at the Masters. And that actually, I didn't find this out until fairly recently, Will Nicholson is the reason for that. Because prior to that, if you read about the history of the Masters, the chair of the competitions committee would just invite buddies to come out and then members. And and so Will, when he was named chair, said, we really need to elevate the quality of our rules officiating. And he constructed a really good rules committee by inviting the tour rules officials, by inviting the USGA rules committee. Obviously, as a president of the USGA, he had great respect for that organization. I didn't even know it. So really, if you think about this, the moral of the story is all of my rules officiating at these championships was due to Will Nicholson Jr., which is pretty cool.
That is cool.
But anyway, I got that when I got the invite to join the rules committee, I knew what was coming. I was going to get an invite to work the Masters. And I was really nervous because I thought, oh my goodness, senior opens, a couple U.S. opens, this is a much bigger deal. And, you know, there's only one Masters. So 3 years. I never had any famous moments, thank goodness. But a big part of that was you don't walk with the group. You're in a zone, and they could not be more clear. Do not be seen. They do not want you on television. And they, you know, you're all these little hiding spots. You really don't see the rules officials unless there's an up close and personal situation on Sunday. And I told myself the same thing. If I ever end up in that situation, I'm getting on the radio. Yeah. I do not need to be famous. Right. I do not need to take my moment in the sun. There's nothing good that's going to come of that.
Nope.
Way to go, Ed. I guess you know your cart path relief. So anyway, 2016 was my first. And what I love about the Masters is they put you in a different hole every day. So you really got to know holes really well. And for whatever reason, over the course of my 3 years, because that's how long I was on the rules committee, I spent a lot of time on the third hole at the Masters, which is a fabulous hole. And unlike 12 or, 16 or the par fives on the back that are so iconic, now that people don't pay attention to three, but three is, first of all, the hole has not been changed much over the years, and it's held the test of time. Mm-hmm. Drivable par four that just completely defies pars. Okay. It just has an incredible ability to, but the one near miss, and it was literally a near miss. So my first day officiating at the Masters, I'm on hole three, and I'm with the former president of the PGA of America. I can't remember. It was Alan Ranowski. It just came to me. So every once in a while, and he's been around the block, and he is not a certified rules official. So I'm the certified rules official, and he's just there to kind of keep me company, I guess. And I'm in a nice chat with him, and he sets up his chair on the corner. This is a drivable par four, and we're right on the corner where they'll go right over our heads if they try to drive the green. Mm-hmm. Well, you can take the caddy out of the caddy yard, but you can't take, I'm still a caddy.
Right.
How the rest of that saying goes. Mm-hmm. So I can't just sit there. I got to watch. I got to get up and spot balls and then worry and anticipate, and where's this one going? So there's Alan just sitting in the chair like, talking, yucking it up with the gal or the patrons, and I'm looking around corners and standing and walking across the other side of the fairway in between groups. And I think he's looking at me like, who is this guy? chill out. So anyway, the day goes by. I think we had zero rulings that day. But here comes Rory McIlroy. And I figure, because I'm starting to really watch, because I'm looking to see, are they hitting driver, are they hitting an iron? Because I want to know, as a good caddy, so there's Rory, and I'm watching his body language. Could you learn, as a rules official, just to watch body language as much as it is the flight of the ball, which is hard to see. So is he leaning one way or another? So I'm standing right on the fairway edge, as I had been a good part of the morning. And then as soon as the ball was hit, I'd kind of make my way behind a tree because I don't want the ball to hit me.
Right.
So he hits it, and I thought the way he was leaning that it was going left. So I didn't work away behind a tree. And then I realized, oh crap, because he was looking, and I just made a quick dodge. That ball missed my foot by 6 inches.
Oh my goodness.
So it hits. I mean, it would have definitely changed, and maybe he would have won the Masters. Who knows? Maybe that's I always thought of the negative.
The
he's never won the Masters. I thought that, but it, so the ball hits and it rolls and it releases perfectly and it ends up on the putting green. And you say, well, why is that amazing? That green is canted from front to back. Mm-hmm. I was talking to several, because the marshals on the holes have been there for generations. It's like you inherit it. It's in your will.
Yeah.
When I die, I want my son to take over my helmet, my spot. So there's a guy, Rob Link, who's a local member of Cherry Hills and Castle Pines, who's on that hole. And I was talking to Rob afterward. He said, I've been on that hole for 14 years. I've never seen a ball end up on the green. They'll go up to the green, roll over.
Yeah.
They'll go up and roll back. But I've never seen a ball actually stop on the green in 13 years. And it's all because it barely missed my foot. Not that he went on to win the tournament. But anyway, that was – so other than that moment, I think I avoided any near catastrophes at the Masters. But it was a lot of fun.
That's always good. Would you go back?
I would not.
Okay.
I would go back to play. I've done everything there. So if you know anybody, if I get an invite to play, I'll be on the first plane. But I've been there. I've been so lucky. I got to see it inside the ropes. I got to go see all the back rooms and be a fly on the wall. Right. Where incredible history. But no, I mean now it's to make room for others to have that opportunity. And I'll be honest. As we sort of wrap this, 30 years of rules officiating, I'm just very thankful that I had the opportunity. And I'm very thankful that I didn't become famous.
Right.
And I'm really, I've been there. I don't need to, I don't love it. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. I love this. I love talking about the rules. Right. My favorite thing to do is to do rule seminars and learn from good questions. And that to me is by far the most enjoyable. I think as the son of a teacher, a high school history teacher, that's always been my passion, is sharing learning with people, and particularly about topics you're passionate about. So to be honest with you, I'd much rather teach a rules seminar than be an official on Sunday at the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
And we just saw it this last year. I mean, there was a situation, I don't know if you recall, Rory McIlroy battling it out with Wyndham Clark at LACC this past year. He ends up embedded in the face of a grass face of a bunker, and the rules official made a mistake. And what I heard is this particular official was trying to get help on the radio, but the radios weren't working. So she was trying to exercise her Motorola rights, but she got the ruling wrong. And, you know, as it turned out, he got an even more favorable relief, probably negligible. But the point is, you know, nobody wants to make a mistake, and we're all human.
Yeah.
And once you do, you're gonna forever be known for that. You know, another great example, Trey Holland, who was one of the greatest rules officials and one of the nicest people you'll ever know. He famously I think it was at Oakmont, gave Ernie Els relief for a temporary movable obstruction that was not a temporary movable obstruction. It wasn't his fault. That's the information he had. So he ruled based on bad information, but guess who was the fall guy?
Right.
He was forever known, and he couldn't have been more self-deprecating about it. I saw Trey years later, and he said, you know, jokingly, if anybody needs to know about TIOs, I'm the expert, and everybody knew what he was talking about. But anyway, I've been very lucky, and again, all I know is with the money they're playing for today, boy, I don't think I'd...
You want to stand in the way of that.
Yeah.
No. So, Ed, with the U.S. Open coming up, any favorites? Anyone you're watching, you're hoping?
No, not really. You know, I think it's pretty obvious. Scottie Scheffler. It's going to be fun to see Wyndham. I'm sorry that Wyndham has not had a great start to his season. I mean, he played really well early. Had a second-place finish at Harbortown, almost came back from way back. Obviously, the Players' Championship finished second, but since then he's kind of struggled. But it'll be fun. It's always fun to have a local kid to root for.
Oh, absolutely.
And this week we have another local kid to root for with Jennifer Kupcho. So,
well, she's always my pick.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, but she's always
so
my pick.
So what about you? So tell us about CJ membership. How many members do we have today?
Well, we have 85,000 members.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. It's wonderful. Yeah. It's wonderful. But you know what else is coming out? Speaking of Pinehurst, is we have our Dream Vacation raffle. And in that raffle is a chance to play Pinehurst number 2. So,
really?
I mean, if you're watching the U.S. Open, you might as well go ahead and buy that raffle ticket.
I did not. I read my, I thought I read my email, but I'd missed that.
Yeah. So, but
because
now.
Because I didn't read it very well.
So now we have that opportunity. So for those that are, you know, listening and wanting to play, have that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, the raffle has really become really a signature event for us.
Right.
Not only does it raise great money for really good causes, our Solar Educating Leadership Academy, all of our outreach programs, but it really is kind of a calling card now. It's fun.
Yeah.
I always buy a couple tickets and figure out if I win, since I'm not eligible, who am I going to give these to?
Right. Yeah, it's a great gift, right?
That's right.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, no. But.
No, and isn't that amazing? 85,000 members. And think about 16 years ago when you started. First of all, we were two associations, the CJ and the CWJ, but we might have had 40,000 members.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to see. And again, a lot of that we owe to the USGA.
We do. Because you can join at the USGA Colorado State Club right through their website. And you'll see a lot of that coming up this week with the Women's Open and then again with the US Open. So, I mean, it's great. And, you know, we're excited because that means golf is healthy.
Yes, it is. So. And, you know, there's very few sports, and this is something I talked about, comparing, we have our doubles golf initiative that we're launching, and I was comparing golf to tennis. And unlike tennis, I can play with somebody who's of any ability.
Right.
And we've been joined here by the man behind the curtain, Aaron Kello. And I'll never forget playing a match with Aaron at Highlands Ranch Golf Course. And man, it was not my. It was not a proud day.
He can putt from 50 yards. Well, I mean,
we've had some great matches, and our handicaps are not exactly the same. But boy, we've had some fun matches. Yeah. And I just remember behaving like a child. I like had a temper tantrum because he drives you crazy. He drives you crazy.
This is true. What I remember, the worst thing for you was having to actually ride in the cart with me.
Oh, after making my double bogey.
Yeah, for almost 18 holes. Yeah. Watching you unravel was one of my favorite.
I'm sure. 25 years. Well, you know, it's funny. People named Aaron, my brother Aaron, and my other brother Aaron, my real brother Aaron, my blood brother Aaron, and my CGA brother Aaron, both have this ability to kind of gloat just a little bit. And I joke with my brother, he kind of, his nostrils flare out when he's, you know, I used to say, uh-oh, we're getting a nostril flare. That means he's gloating. And he gloats at Scrabble where he beats me. But they both have that tendency. I don't think it is. Actually, I think it's entirely, I've invented this. It's just my own competitive lack of sports.
But now you associate it with the name Aaron.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I would say it's true. My gloating is very subtle, however. It's not nose flare or anything like that, but I can feel it. Can you feel like a gloat, even though you're facially not trying to show it?
Oh, yeah.
But you know something is changed about you. And it could be you feel like a smirk, even though you're not smirking or something like that.
Well, you're repressing the smirk.
You're
like, I wonder if there's any outward signs of the smirk that
when
I'm having.
When I watch your putt roll past the hole, and I just watch for an extra half of a second before I kind of
look away, get
back in the cart, and just know it's going to be silent ride to the next hole.
Well, this isn't, you know, when you see an adult have a temper tantrum, and you just want to laugh, but you can't, you know, that's kind of the similar feeling. Mm-hmm. But all right, well, we better cut it here because, you know, right now we're how many minutes? 32? Because people will actually listen or not based on how long.
Absolutely. It's a workout. It's or a drive time.
No, we'll say, okay, how long is this Spirit of the Game? 40 minutes? Forget that. But I got 23. I got 23, but I don't have 40. So we better cut it there.
Yes.
So nice to have a little change of venue.
It's been fun. Thank
I
you.
Hope Lewis is back next month. We'll give him a chance. No,
it
for
won't
his
be
sake.
Quite as
for
much
his
fun.
Sake. I love this. No.
Let me know anytime I'm available.
All right. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.